I said at the beginning, I want to offer this Mass in honor of Saints Cosmas and Damian. I think it's a good place to start. I don't know anyone named Cosmas, but I do know a lot of people, and several men I know named Damian, and your grandson is Damian. Damian, I saw his this Mass is for his intentions. Damian. I don't know if it's not his birthday today, is it? Oh, but he might not even be named after him directly, but he has, that's his patron, so it's good to have a saintly patron. I connect Saint Damian or San Damiano, I think would be the Italian version, and also in the Philippines, San Damiano. You know, the Church of San, or the cross, the San Damiano cross, is connected to Saint Francis of Assisi and his part of his conversion moment. It was from the cross, that San Damiano cross, Jesus told him to rebuild my church. Wasn't that the vision? So it's a good thing there was a great devotion to St. Cosmas and Damian, because that led to the establishment of that church in Assisi probably hundreds of years before St. Francis and whoever painted that crucifix. And then God used that to speak to St. Francis, and then God used St. Francis to do his work. And you see how there's this chain reaction of grace in the church. So here we're talking about two saints from way back. They think probably the very beginning of the 300s, 302, 303, certainly during the reign of Diocletian, the very fierce persecutor of the church. We don't know really much about Cosmas and Damian. In fact, what we know for sure is that they were martyred. But the tradition is that they were doctors. Maybe if you look in the Animum Mei, you can see this little description of them, that they were twin brothers, that they were both skilled doctors, and that they did their ministry of healing for no payment. And so they had this nickname, the moneyless ones. Actually, the Greek term is the silverless ones. They had no silver, had no money. So selfless service of the sick, which is certainly deeply rooted in the history of the church, and a great expression of Christian service. So Cosmas and Damian were doctors. And because they were serving and because they weren't accepting money, they were obviously Christians. And so when the persecution broke out, they're easy targets, as it says here, easy targets for Diocletian and his henchmen. It says here that when they refused to deny their faith, they were tortured and finally beheaded along with their three younger brothers. Cosmas and Damian are patron saints of surgeons, physicians, dentists, and pharmacists. Now, that's a beautiful thing to have such holy patrons for people working in the medical field or in the healing professions. At least one doctor here. I don't know if there's other doctors or nurses who are here. Nurse. A nurse or doctor?
Dental hygienist.
Okay, dental hygienist. Okay, so that's in here too, dentists and dental. So, I mean, but the healing professions are a very beautiful way of serving. And everyone knows in our times how difficult it is to keep that spirit when the business orientation of the medical world has taken over. And so even very good, selfless doctors, nurses, and healers, they have to work in the system. They have to see so many patients. They have to work so many hours. They have to do so many tests. And, you know, insurance only covers this and that. And then this costs more and that costs less. And how much this medicine costs and all these things. So it's become quite a difficult, it's a beautiful field of ministry, but it's also a very difficult one in modern times. So we need the intercession of Saints Cosmas and Damian to help preserve and actually strengthen the Christian motive for serving the sick. Because the Christian motive for serving the sick is not to make more money, or not to keep the business going, or not to get the, you know, another hospital in the system, or whatever happens. You know, I know a lot of people who work in the business side, and that's a big part of the medical profession now. And the doctors become the employees of the company. So now that's not in itself bad, but it can crush this spirit of caring for the sick, which is what motivated Cosmas and Damian and motivates a lot of good doctors and medical professionals. So we ask their intercession. for all our all the work of healing. Now, what is it that moves people to do this kind of service of the sick? People in the world might say, well, that's a kind of altruism, you know, it's a natural tendency to be compassionate to those who are in need, those who are suffering, and there is something to that. But that's not enough to move people to lay down their lives and to accept martyrdom. Altruism is a good thing and good natural motivation, you know, other-centeredness, and it's a real one. But that's not at the deepest root of Cosmas and Damien. to get to the root, we have to go to Jesus himself. Christian service is rooted on the service of Jesus, who lays down his life for us. And that takes us to today's gospel. Jesus here wants, first of all, to know what people think of him or who they think he is. And he gets the answers of the popular opinions. Maybe he's John the Baptist. Maybe he's Elijah. Maybe he's a prophet. And then Jesus puts them on the spot. You know this very well, because we hear this passage or versions of it often. He says, well, who do you say that I am? Not that he wants to simply know what they know, but he wants them to know the truth of who he is. And this is the way he does it, by asking them the question. He doesn't go to them and say, I'm the Christ of God, I'm the Messiah. He says, who do you say that I am? In other words, it's not enough for me to be the Messiah. You have to be the ones to also accept the truth of who I am. And so Peter, as we know, is the one who gives the right answer, the Christ of God, or we are maybe more familiar with the Hebrew term, the Messiah of God. They mean the same thing, Messiah and Christ. You are the Messiah. Now, anyone who follows the daily liturgy is more familiar with Matthew's account of this event, when Jesus is identified by Peter. Peter says, you are the Christ of God, the Son of the living God. And then in Matthew's account, Jesus says, and you are rock. You're the rock on which I will build my church. And then there's that interchange when Jesus starts to talk about his passion, as he does at the end of today's gospel. And then Peter's reaction is, well, no, that should never happen. You know that. So there's a much more developed account of this. But here in Luke's version, we have the true identification of who Jesus is. He is the Messiah. And then Jesus explains what that means. Don't talk about this to anybody, because you yourselves don't know yet. He says he rebuked them. He rebuked them and directed them not to tell this to anyone. He didn't rebuke them for identifying who he was. He was putting them in their place and saying, no, you have to learn first before you start telling other people your ideas about who I am. First of all, learn from me. And then he starts to say, am I the Son of Man? Meaning Jesus himself will suffer. He will be rejected. He will be killed, and he will be raised on the third day. That's the gospel. It's Saints Cosmas and Damien and all saints build on this foundation of Jesus' death and resurrection, not on just compassion for poor people or sick people, or the idea that I can do something good for others and I feel good about myself when I help them. That's all fine, but that's not the same as Jesus, who lays down his life for us, for our healing. So now Jesus puts this on the disciples and on us. Now you understand, or you come to understand who I am. I am a selfless one. So Cosmas and Damien were moneyless ones, but Christians are selfless ones. They are those who make a gift of themselves for the glory of God and for the good of our brothers and sisters. And we can learn something about how this works by turning to today's first reading. This is another account from the prophet Haggai. Haggai is a very short book, and yesterday and today are only passages from Haggai, but they're beautiful, beautiful passages to ponder. And we're not going to read from Haggai again until, well, 2027. So let's welcome it while we have him here. Haggai. So here, again, he gives a message from the Lord to the governor and to the high priest and to all the people, the remnant of the people, those who are in exile or who have returned from exile and have the responsibility of building the house and they're not doing it yet. So this is message to the government and to the church and to everybody. And it's an interesting thing. The first thing he says is, okay, you know, this seems like nothing to you now. This temple, this city of Jerusalem, especially the temple, you know, it's nothing like it was. In fact, it seems like nothing to you now. And that's why you're discouraged. But now take courage, Zerubbabel. Take courage, Joshua. Take courage, all you people of the land, and work. So the word of the Lord to them is, don't be discouraged by what you see, the nothingness that you see, but work. Get to work. Then, in the second part of the reading, the Lord reveals through Haggai what he's going to do. So yeah, you get to work now, because this is what I'm telling you to do. But actually, I'm the one who's going to do this. I'm the one who's going to shake the heavens and the earth. I'm the one who's going to bring in all the, I mean, the gold and the silver is mine anyway. And I'm the one who's going to fill this house with glory. And then he says, greater will be the future glory of this house than the former. So I have in mind something greater than you even saw before. Yeah, I'm telling you to work, but I'm the one who's going to establish my house here. Now, this is an important thing to keep together, because yes, we have a responsibility, but God is the one who is doing the work, and we're participating in that work. Both. We can neither sit back and do nothing, saying, well, God is doing everything and I'll just be the recipient, nor can we take it all on ourselves and say, well, I'm going to do something and prove to God that I'm worthy of him. Neither of those work. We have to have both work and dependence on God, or the traditional expression is prayer and work. Prayer and work, right? Ora et labora, from St. Benedict. Or that expression that is sometimes attributed to St. Ignatius, questionably, but it's a beautiful little expression. Pray as if everything depends on God. Work as if everything depends on you. Well, does it all depend on God, or does it all depend on me? Well, both. Obviously, God is the foundation. He does everything, and everything is in his power. But he wants us to be participants. So, yes, we do have to work. So take courage, Zerubbabel. Take courage, you who have public responsibilities. Take courage, Joshua, high priest, clergy. Take courage, all you people of the land, all you Catholics, all you Anuim. Take courage and work. Without the idea that it's all on you. Because if we take that idea, we either get very proud, or more often we get discouraged, because it looks like nothing. We work and work and work and nothing happens. Well, why should we keep working? It's just a waste of just wasting our time. Well, because God calls us to work. He calls us to take courage and to work with the awareness that he's going to do something greater than we can even imagine. In fact, he is doing it. That's what faith tells us. He's doing something greater, and the future glory of this house will be greater than the former. So whatever is the greatest thing you've ever seen or imagined, God has something greater in mind, and that's what he's asking us to participate in. So that's I think, the kind of thing that keeps some people like Cosmas and Damian going. And here they are serving, they're taking care of sick people, they're poor people who don't give them anything. They're in living in poverty. Then along comes the government, and they oppose them. Then they get tortured. And they can imagine them saying, well, what do you mean? I did all this good stuff. Why does it seem like nothing? It seems like, in fact, I'm worse off now serving the poor and serving the Lord. Now I'm in prison and being tortured. You can imagine that human reaction. What a waste of effort. No. That's not the response of faith. Faith says, I work because the Lord calls me to work. I take courage because the Lord says, take courage. I serve because the Lord calls me to serve. But the reason why I can keep doing it is because he has served first. He gives the gift of courage first. In fact, he's laid down his life first, and he's calling us to follow him. So that's the bigger picture of what's going on. And whenever we get discouraged or it seems like our efforts are wasted, we have to step back and say, no, actually what's really happening here is the Lord is working out something greater than we can even imagine. And that's a good motivation. So we ask St. Saints Cosmas and Damian to pray for us and for everyone working in the healing arts, the healing ministries. And we also ask them to pray for all of us that we can take courage and work.